Welcome to the fourth episode of the Solar Power Hour with our first official guest, Pam Pareles, who is the executive director of CASA in the Peoria area. Pam, why don't you kick us off and tell us a little bit about CASA?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for inviting me. I really appreciate the opportunity to share about CASA. CASA stands for Court Appointed Special Advocate. And what we do is we recruit, train, and supervise everyday citizens to be the voice of children going through the abuse or neglect court. So this is a powerful way to really impact a child's life and their future. So it started off with a judge in Seattle, Washington,
Really?
about 40 years ago. He saw this reoccurring need in his courtroom and really wondered if he was making the right decisions. He didn't feel he had adequate information. So he called a brown bag lunch and thought he would have a handful of people show up in his courtroom to brainstorm how for him to get more information. And 50 people showed up.
Wow.
And that was the start of CASA. So it became just, such a great success in his area that it became a federal program. And now there are 950 state and local programs across the United States. And we're lucky to be one program in Illinois. So we're very excited. It's a very rewarding. We have amazing volunteers. Some of our volunteers are actually Sun Collector's employees. So thank you for that.
Absolutely.
But yeah, it's a great way to make a difference in our community, because when you look at what our community is about for the future, it's our children, right? That's our most precious commodity is our children. And what a better way to impact the future by impacting lives today, making sure they're getting what they need to thrive and be successful.
I love it. And so we've been supporting CASA for years now, and I couldn't think of a better guest to have on right this close to Christmas. This will be our last podcast before Christmas. And with CASA and giving, in the spirit of giving, I would say, there's definitely a huge need for it in this area. How many open cases do you have right now?
So, in our 5-county area, we serve Peoria, Tazewell, Putnam, Stark, and Marshall. There's about 1,700 pending abuse and neglect cases. That's a lot of kids in our backyard.
That's a
That's a
huge number.
huge number. And right now, with our resources and volunteers that we have, we were only able to serve about 412 last year. So we're doing a huge recruitment campaign this year. We want to recruit 100 new volunteers.
I would love that.
Yeah, so we can serve 300 more children. So our goal is to get up to 700 children this year. So it's still far from what we need because every child deserves a voice.
Absolutely.
So,
And so let's talk about what it takes to be a volunteer and what that looks like from the volunteer aspect.
oh, yeah. So you have to be 21 and you have to pass a background check. But we train you and teach you everything else you need to know. So we have volunteers from all walks of life, all different ages. And so we have a 32-hour training curriculum. That's a national CASA curriculum that our volunteers go through. Once they complete that, then they're sworn in as an officer of the court, and then they get appointed to a case. While they're a volunteer, what they do is they're going to meet with a child once a month at least, face to face. And they're going to take information from that child and find out what's going on in their life. They're going to meet with other people in the case. They're going to meet with foster parents. They're going to meet with biological parents. They're going to meet with caseworkers and attorneys, and it could be therapists. And they gather all this information to put into a court report and go to court on behalf of the child every 6 months. So the most important part about our court report, though, is child's wishes. So our volunteers are always asking the kids, what do you want us to tell the judge? What does he need to know? And so that's very powerful for them to be able to have that voice
Absolutely.
and make that known. So
So, what would you say the hourly time commitment is per month if you had to average it out?
yeah, so for a volunteer, we ask for 5 to 10 hours a month. And we do ask for a 2-year commitment. So cases, you know, they take a long time to work through the system. And we want to be that one consistent voice in a child's life. There's a lot of turnover in our courtrooms. And so we want to be that one consistent voice for that child.
Yeah, I love the idea of having the kids have a voice. So, and also the time commitment. I think that a lot of people out there want to make a huge difference or a huge impact and don't really know how to start. But with something like 5 to 10 to 15 hours a month, that's not a lot of time to make a huge impact that, you know, a lot of CASA volunteers probably never see the ripples that they make in that child's life, you know, 10, 15, 20 years down the line. Those kids could, you know, be in college or in the place that they really need to have families of their own, and they can help inspire and lead them the way that the CASA volunteer gave them that hope and that aspiration. So I really do love what CASA does and how hard you work as well as the rest of the CASA volunteers to make a difference in a underserved community.
Absolutely. And that was one of the things that when I train, I always focus on. It's about planting hope into children, because you may not see the results of a case as a volunteer while you're on that case. But like you said, many years later, that lives with these children. They know to have people advocate for them. They're going to remember that when they grow up. And, you know, and it helps teach them how to advocate for others. So hopefully we get that ripple effect. The other thing, too, is, you know, these children are in the system not because they did anything wrong, but because their parents couldn't or wouldn't provide a safe home for them. So the state statute is reunification. So the goal is always to reunify families. And if that's accomplished, parents have corrected the issues that brought them into care. And we make a better society, right?
Absolutely.
Kids want to go home. If that can happen, that's the best thing for everybody. So,
and so the reason why I fell in love with CASA is I had a relatively rough childhood, and, you know, moving around from parent to parent. I went to 22 schools before the seventh grade, and narrowly avoided foster care several times. And DCFS was involved for this reason, or the other, but very unstable childhood. And my grandmother was always our saving grace. So every time it was about to that point where no one else could take us. You know, my grandmother on my mother's side took care of not only us and my mother, but sometimes my dad would be there with her as well. And so she was just constantly this super, super impactful and loving figure in our lives, and went above and beyond, you know, honestly, the most selfless woman I've ever come to know. And just the way that she was able to give back year after year, day after day, even when she had nothing to give. And so the idea of, you know, in my opinion, that was my CASA. My grandmother, yes, was my mima, I should say, was my CASA. And she was able to inspire me to help others. And, you know, years and years in the business and giving back to the community, you know, CASA is something that we've been steadfast with, because, as you said, there are a lot of kids out there that don't have the support or don't have the voice that they need to have. And, you know, I remember coming up and at a young age, just wanting my voice to be heard. You know, knowing the situation better than a DCFS agent that was coming, you know, and trying to, in my opinion, get information out of me that was kind of their idea instead of what the honest opinion of what I had was. Mm-hmm. And just not to be heard at such a young age, it definitely, you know, just carries some scars with that. But the idea of having someone like my grandmother, or like someone that's just selflessly and unbiasedly giving their opinion to the courts and what's the best decision for that child, at least as best as you can make it, and just the amount of time and effort it takes. But I would imagine, too, when these CASA volunteers get into those families and get assimilated and, like, really get to know the kids, they want to spend more than just 5 to 10 to 15 hours a month with them.
Well, actually, they're not spending that much time, mm-hmm, a month with the child.
Right.
Usually it's maybe an hour, unless, mm-hmm, they're retired or they have more time in their life to accommodate. I mean, we have some volunteers that spend 5 hours a month with a child. But that time, that 5 to 10 to 15 hours a month, is your time reading. Mm-hmm. It's your time talking to your CASA supervisor, your time talking to caseworkers, you know, writing notes, reading court reports. You know, maybe you're going back in history and looking what's happened from the beginning of the case. So all that is time, you know, driving to and from. That's all time. So really, when you look at it, it's not a lot of time, right? To spend with a child. But thank you for sharing that meaningful story about your grandma, because, you know, there's a lot of great grandparents in our community that have had to step up to help raise their grandchildren. And it is, you know, very, very giving of them to be able to do that. You know, at that point, you think, you know, oh, it's my time in life. But, you know, our time in life is about the future, and it's about all kids, and all kids deserve, you know, to have a better life and have someone speak up for them. So it was good for you, right? Yeah. You had someone to do that. There's kids out there that don't have anybody, and it's very, very sad. So I know that some of the stories that we hear from kids and what their CASA has meant to them, it's, you know, because of confidentiality, we don't talk about everything. Mm-hmm. We can't give names or anything like that for our cases. We can talk about in generality of cases, but the stories are just heartbreaking. Yeah. You know, they really are.
So what's some of your biggest success stories with CASA? Because you've been doing this quite a while, right?
Yeah. So next year is a big year for us. So it's going to be our 20th anniversary, July 11th. That's so awesome. We're already starting to plan for next year and what's that going to look like, and, you know, celebrate all the great successes we've had over the years, and, you know, serving hundreds and hundreds of children every year. We started off as a one-person shop, me, mm-hmm. you know, 20 years ago. And so, you know, being able to sustain and grow right. every year has been, you know, a challenge always. And in 2018, we were able to expand to 5 counties, and you know, we have some other things that we're trying to work on and make it even bigger. And hopefully, someday soon, we'll be able to serve every child that's in our circuit in the abuse and neglect court. So that's our goal: is to have CASA serve every child.
Absolutely. So. And I imagine it's kind of a snowball effect too. If you can help these children out now, you know, 20 years down the road, maybe the abuse and neglect cases actually go down over time, right? So when you have proper education, proper leadership, and the means of someone met, typically the things like that start to diminish. So that's the hope, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, I've seen that decrease since I've started. When I first started with CASA, you know, almost 20 years ago, Peoria County alone had about 1,500 abuse and neglect cases. So, we've got great judges right now that are very passionate, and they've worked really hard at trying to help reduce that. And we're greatly supported by the judicial system. I mean, the judges really support what CASA does. And we got 14 new cases just last week. And so, you know, we are needed. Mm-hmm. And so we need more volunteers, though.
Absolutely. So if someone wanted to become a CASA volunteer, how would they get involved?
Oh, absolutely. Just go to our website. Mm-hmm. There's great information on that, on how to become a volunteer. Click the link. You can apply. You can call our office at 309-669-2939 and just say, hey, I want more information about being a CASA volunteer. We have a recruiter, Ryan, who will reach back out to you and get you signed up. We have a training starting in January 20th. So already got a big class already. We're really excited about it. So, but the more, the merrier, right? Absolutely.
Yeah. And Ryan's such a great guy. I've been talking to him over the years and getting to know him. He definitely goes above and beyond for the kids as well as the volunteers to make sure that they're well equipped to deal with what they have to.
He's very passionate. He is. And he's been with me for a long time. I've got a great staff. Mm-hmm. A lot of them have been around for a long time. So it's really nice. To have such a good team, mm-hmm. right? That support the kids, and the kids know it, the team knows it. So I'm very proud of what we've been able to establish in Peoria with CASA.
Love it. And so you also have a few events, a few fundraisers throughout the year that we're heavily involved with and have been for the last, you know, I think 3 years, four years now, something like that. And they're always such fun and amazing events. You know, they're not the cheapest thing in the world to go to, but the impact that money makes in the system as well as for these kids is well worth it. And I'll let you talk more about those in a moment. But, you know, just over the years, it's been an honor to see not only, you know, myself and my business partner and a company stand up, but also people that we employ coming to these events and giving very graciously some of their money to bid on auction items or just straight up donating the money to CASA. So it's been really fun to see my team grow and get back more and more every year.
Well, we certainly have appreciated your VIP partnership the last few years. And what that has done is because of your very nice, generous VIP partnership, you get a part in every event that we do. So, and I love that you bring your team members and let them experience that. So thank you.
Absolutely. We try to build a culture around here of giving back and philanthropy because you don't have to be retired to give back. And, you know, obviously the amount of money you have coming in is going to directly correlate to what you're going to give out. But at the end of the day, if they can give something or they can show up and show out or just learn about it, that way they can talk to somebody else in the community about it. It speaks volumes to how these guys are showing up and, you know, how we're represented in the area as well. So I really do appreciate CASA for everything you do because, you know, you guys do go above and beyond for us and trying to make sure we have extra seats or do this, that, and the other. And it was an honor to dance at the Casablanca this year and dance tango. I had a good time. It was fun.
You were amazing. That was like, wow. I was just, yes.
Yeah. We'll have to get the video up when we get it back and get it up on YouTube and stuff so the people out there watching can see it. But it was quite the experience.
It was awesome. It really was. You're a good dancer, too. I mean, you surprised me. Wow.
I try not to do anything half-assed. So when you tell me I'm going to be ready in 2 months, I spent a lot of time getting there. So.
Thank you.
It was fun.
Thank you.
Yeah. Any other events you want to talk about coming up in the next year?
Well, there again, I talked about how we're going to be celebrating our 20th year. So every event that we have, we are going to try to really go above and beyond, right? Oh. So going back to those events, you know, as a nonprofit, we're probably one of the smallest nonprofits in the community. We don't have a very large budget. Mm-hmm. It's under $1.5 million. Most of it is just basic operations. Right. And a third of that budget, though, is from our fundraising. Okay. A third of it is from grants, mm-hmm. and a third of it is from in-kind contributions. Mm-hmm. So like office spaces and our IT services, things that people donate for us to raffle or auction off, those type of things. So when you think about it, these fundraisers have a big impact on what we do because it's a third of our budget.
Right.
So our next one coming up will probably be one of those events that doesn't cost a lot. So we have a young board member who developed this Cocktails for CASA. Mm-hmm. And so it's really designed at trying to attract younger community members to giving, but also as a recruitment tool, because, you know, a lot of younger folks can't afford our big ticket items if they don't work at a corporation that buys a table. So it's a $50 for that. And it's just kind of a small, but it's a very fun and intimate group. And it's been a good success. Then we have Sip Saver Smoke coming up June 5th.
That was always a fun one.
Yes, at Peoria Country Club. So we've got some new ideas to kind of build on that this year and make that even a better event for our guests. Oh. And it's fun. People always talk about how they love it. It's a lot of the same people that come back all the time. That ticket price is $250 a person. So
it's worth every penny. If you enjoy bourbon or scotch and cigars, or even if you don't, it's definitely worth the money to have a good time, especially the community leaders that you bring into these events as well, and being able to network and talk with them and figure out why they're so passionate about CASA as well. It's worth every dollar, in my opinion.
And you know what? It's been a good recruitment event for us as well at Sip Saver Smoke. Mm-hmm. And then we have our golf outing, which we've been doing for 16 years, I believe. I think this will be the 17th year for our hole-in-one golf event. And that's at Peoria Country Club. And Jeff Doden, who has been the chair of that event for all of these years, I so appreciate all the work that he does with that event, too. And then Casablanca, Dancing with the Local Stars. That's, you know, that's our biggest event. Mm-hmm. We've been very fortunate to have great crowds at that and looking at our venues and what we're going to do. But the board, we'll be having a committee meeting in January to look at how we're going to maybe bring some of the past back. So in the early years, before we started Dancing with the Star with that event, it was a very black and white event, and we had the Casablanca movie playing.
Oh, wow.
So we're going to try to look at bringing back some of those things this year to really celebrate our 20th anniversary. So look out. It's going to be exciting this year.
I'm sure it's going to be bigger and better than ever, especially with that kind of anniversary. And, you know, it's awesome that the Casa has been around for that long. You know, we've been supporting it for years now, but I didn't even know it was 20 years old. So I thought it was a newer initiative. So there's just so many kids that have been helped through that program, and more to come as well. So
absolutely.
Talking a little bit about what we do for Casa, above just the endorsement every year that we sign that check and grateful to do so. But we also run an initiative here for Merry and Bright Christmas. For those of you who don't know what that is, we get kids through CASA advocates as well as DCFS and the school system who really aren't going to get much of a Christmas, if any at all. And so this is our fourth year doing it. And this, as we finish up these families, it'll be 53 families that we've been able to help provide Christmas for. And the reason why this all started is, you know, as we got more in our philanthropy giving mood, you know, a few years back as we started having some success with business, I thought back at a time where life was hard. We weren't really going to get much of a Christmas. My algebra teacher, actually, which was one of the first people that inspired me to learn and showed interest in me as a student with how well I was doing in math. And her church actually was able to provide Christmas for us for 2 years in a row. And so that, and you're talking about ripple effects, that little act of kindness that they did, and, you know, it wasn't substantial, but it was, you know, a couple $100 of toys that we weren't going to have at all. And giving back now, and what that means to our corporation is that we match any donations given to us by our employees or our reps, meaning that if someone says, hey, look, I want to sponsor a kid, they know that that's going to mean either $500 to $1,200 that you're going to be filling up a shopping cart with to give back. And so it's a little bit more extravagant than the $200 we got, but it does make a huge impact. I mean, this year alone, I bought 2 computers for kids who were going to online classes or really need a computer. And it's just a lot of the times they want to buy stuff for their parents as well, get like cleaning supplies, or buy something for the little one, little brother or sister, or even get cat food and treats for the cat, as the one did the other day. But it's such an honor to be able to take these kids out and make a huge impact on them. And you never know what's going to come of that. So even if half of the kids we've done of the 53 end up doing something like that in the future as they get older, I mean, that's hundreds and hundreds of families that Christmas can be provided for. So that's just a little bit about Merry and Bright. And what's been your experience with it?
Well, I would like to share with you about that. I think you get to see one side of it, right? Mm-hmm. And there's a whole nother side that you don't know.
Okay.
There really is. I mean, when I get the call, hey, you know, I need, give us 10 families. Mm-hmm. So what goes into selecting those families? And you'll never know the impact that you have by doing this, really. You just won't. So this morning we had our staff meeting, mm-hmm. and they were all sharing about the ones that had already gone on their shopping sprees and just some of the stories. I mean, you just want to sit and cry when you hear about it. Really. I mean, I know one story that actually you were on the shopping trip with a young man, mm-hmm. and you asked that young man to share his memory of his favorite Christmas. Mm-hmm. And he said, it's this one, because of what you were doing for him.
Absolutely.
You know, and so that goes a long way. You know, mm-hmm. you don't know the trauma that these kids have been under, because we can't share with you about their situation or their circumstances. Right. And so it's really big to them. And even if they don't express it to you guys during the shopping spree, mm-hmm. what my team comes back and tells me about and what the kids share with them about it is just heartbreaking. It really is. I know another young family that they're working on. They've done such an incredible job in doing everything they need to do to get their kids back. And so they're really starting fresh, and they have nothing. Mm-hmm. And when they found out that they were being selected to go shop, they were just like overwhelmed by it. And here was the need that they need. They just needed basic needs. Mm-hmm. So it was a lot of, they have very young children. So it was clothing, mm-hmm. it was diapers, it was formula, It was shoes, because the one little boy had shoes on, shoes that were way too big. So actually getting shoes that fit, lotions, you know, bath gel, things like that. I mean, things that were so meaningful to this, these parents. To have this was just, I mean, someone had gone and picked out a couple of cases of diapers, and your person said, no, that's not enough. Go back, get a couple more. Go get some more. They brought, came back with two more. No, go get some more. The dad actually started crying. You know, so basic needs for people is a big thing, you know. It really is. So those are things that you guys probably don't know, mm-hmm. the impact on these families. There was another volunteer who got a call about their child. And this child is getting close to adoption, but when she got the call from her, the supervisor, she goes, oh, you don't know what this means. You have no idea. Because that child's grandparent had just passed away that weekend. And to be able to have a shopping trip was really what she needed, right. You know? And then when a lot of these kids, I think that's what my team was talking about this morning, kids don't understand when somebody says, well, go pick out things. They have no clue. They've never had the opportunity to ever go shopping before. Right. And so I know they shared one little girl picked out a piece of jewelry mm-hmm. that was like $4. And she thought that was what she got to shop for. And then they kept pushing, no, get more. What else? And so it gets overwhelming. They're excited, but it's also very anxious for them to be yeah. able to do this. But you know, talk about the memories many years later of this experience for them. I know one young girl was telling the advocate as they kind of went off to pick out a few things. She said, I feel like I'm getting to shop with my big sister, and I've never had that experience before. So there's just so many stories that it's like, I mean, we were like crying today, you know, hearing about all this and the impact. We will never know the impact for these kids. Absolutely. And how beautiful it is. So it's a tremendous thing that you and your team are doing. So maybe we need to come and talk to your team and let them know and experience what it really is doing. And then not only the experience of them getting to shop mm-hmm. and have all these material things, but by your team members going with them to shop, mm-hmm. these people or young adults or, you know, older youth get to see those role models, mm-hmm. right? That they're like, that's all playing in their head as well. Wow, this young person is doing this. Mm-hmm. And I think it plants those seeds of hope that someday they can do that for somebody else.
Absolutely. That's what it's all about, is inspiring them. And a lot of times they are a little uncomfortable, and it's a weird thing for someone to actually truly do a act of selflessness and kindness, and especially when they've been subjected to a harder life. And we try to make it as comfortable as we can. We try to push them just to have fun and get whatever they really want and need. And I would say, you know, after the first 10 or 15 minutes of the skittishness, they start to get that, okay, you know, there is, you know, a limit of some sort, but they'll let me know whenever I'm getting yes. in close. So it's cool to see what they pick out, you know, either electronics or just toys, makeup, and then necessities too. And talking about the younger kids with diapers and things, I think a lot of people with means take it for advantage of how easy it is to raise a kid, or how much easier it is to raise a kid when you have all these things that you can just go to Walmart and buy them, and you don't have to worry about the money. And you're talking about lotions and diaper rashes and just having diapers and clothing. I mean, imagine if you were struggling not only for the food on your table, but for the food and formula for a kid and the diapers. So just to be able to go out there and get that kind of stuff for them, the necessities, and set that kid up for success. Because believe it or not, we do remember, and our 1 to 5 year old self is very, what's the word, impactful for the rest of your life and how you grow up. So
it's really making a difference than just... what a great name, Merry and Bright, right? Because that's what it's doing for these families. When they get called, when they get told what they get to do, they're just like in awe mm-hmm. you know, being able to have this experience. And then when they actually do it, and then they're still processing it. And so it really is. It's amazing. It's so amazing. Thank you.
No worries. Yeah, it's hopefully year after year we get bigger and better. Again, we just match it. So at the end of the day, we had six kids sponsored by our employees. And then, yeah, another seven that we sponsored because we had an extra family that we wanted to take out. But yeah, it's been an amazing experience to put this together year after year. And, you know, even as the economy and things change in our industry, we always show up and show out for the community. And, you know, after this, we'll be leaving to go to another thing that we do. And that's the Tipping Big for the community. And for those of you that don't know out there, it's a $100 tip that everybody brings in. They pay for their own food. And with ideas to get, you know, anywhere from 12 to 35 people at each restaurant. And it's called Tipping Big for the community. You can find the Facebook page. But yeah, it's just a really good time to be doing something like that. And then the stories you get to hear from these waiters or waitresses that this is what I'm going to be able to do with the money. You know, whether they just go into a divorce or don't know how they're going to feed their or get Christmas presents for their kids. I think last year was a single mom with three kids and working two jobs just to provide Christmas for them. So be able to like, give her another $2,200 to do what she wanted to with it. It makes a huge impact. And it's not, you know, you don't have to do too much, just $100 from your pocket. When you combine $100 with 20 other people and you give somebody $2,000, it does make a huge impact. And it's such a fun thing too. You get to meet all kinds of different people from the community and just talk about life and, you know, different restaurant every week or every month. But yeah, this is, how many have you been to, Pam? Is this your?
I have not been. I think this is my first one.
Your first one? Shame, so, Pam. Shame.
I know.
Had to get you into the podcast to get you to the lunch.
No, I'd already committed to Steve before the podcast came up. So, yeah.
So this will be the first one. You picked a good one. Christmas is always.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
And we try to find restaurants that aren't necessarily corporate chains or doing super well or high-end restaurants. They're usually more on the dive bar kind of side of things, but those are the people that need it the most. Again, everything we try to do is to make the biggest impact for the community, for people, either through solar or, you know, the charitable contributions or just how we show up. And even the Christmas parade that we did and having a DJing son up there. Were you able to see that as well?
I was not.
You should have seen Austin up there DJing with an inflatable sun outfit. It was adorable.
Oh my goodness.
It was really
fun. So you guys have fun.
Yeah, we try.
You do a lot in the community. And you have fun at doing it.
Absolutely. But as we wrap up here, Pam, is there anything else you want to share about CASA or your Sun Collector's involvement?
Well, you know, as we're ending this year, I think about what you've been blessed with and thinking about the new year and how you can bless others in our community. Please think about becoming a CASA volunteer.
Absolutely.
We would love to have you, truly. And whatever child you get assigned to, would love to have you.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for being on, Pam. And I think with this will end our fourth episode. I wish everyone out there a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. We'll see you back here in January.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.